I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Last month, leaders of the School District of Philadelphia unveiled a reorganization plan that would dramatically transform public education. It includes closing school buildings, opening more charters, cutting administrative jobs, decentralizing the central office, and creating something called achievement networks run by outside contractors. The plan has received both praise and criticism. A few weeks ago, we spoke with Pedro Ramos and Lorene Carey of the School Reform Commission and with the Chief Recovery Officer, Thomas Knudsen. Today, we hear from three critics who join us here in our Philadelphia studio. Jerry Jordan is president of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. And Jerry Jordan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you here. Helen Gim blogs for the Public School Notebook, leads Asian Americans United, and founded Parents United for Public Education. Helen Gim, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. Also with us is Daniel Denver. He's a staff writer for the Philadelphia City Paper and a contributing writer at Salon. His most recent City Paper cover story asked, "Who's Killing Philly Public Schools?" And Daniel Denver, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
We're going to take apart this proposal, and I want to get your response to several parts of the proposal. And Jerry Jordan, I'll start with you. The plan calls for closing something like 64 schools over a period of 5 years or so. Are you troubled by school closures as part of this proposal?
I am troubled by the magnitude of the school closures. We understand that there may be some schools that certainly are not occupied by enough students. Part of that is the result of the management of the school district, too, when they created a large number of small schools a few years ago, thereby dispersing our children more. However, the process that this plan is outlining, and it's not a very clear process. They're not telling the public or the parents which schools are being closed in which communities, nor are we being told how far little first graders and kindergarten students may have to walk to their nearest school.
Helen, give your response to this part of the proposal.
We need to have an important conversation about school closings. We need to have an important conversation about resources and about, buildings which are on average 70 years old on average. But what the plan does by sort of dropping this firebomb in the middle of the debate, which is to say we're going to close 40 schools next year, another 64 within 5 years, is it upends all that conversation. It sort of polarizes people. It shocks people into silence. And we can't have important conversations about school closings and school resources that need to happen. And instead, people are in shock. And I think that's part of what you're seeing such a strong reaction to. We want reasoned dialogue. We're not getting it.
And how about for you, Daniel Denver?
Yeah, I mean, I think both the proponents of the plan and critics agree that there are problems that need to be solved. But what's bizarre about this plan in terms of the school closures is there clearly is an overcapacity problem, but the plan is premised on the growth of charters in this district from educating 25% of students to an extraordinary 40%. And it's that growth of charter schools cannibalizing the district both fiscally and in terms of students that is a big driver of this undercapacity problem. So the plan makes that capacity problem worse, and we'll be back at the drawing board having to deal with 40, 60 more school closures 5-10 years down the road.
Let me pick up on the charter issue. And as you said, Daniel, this plan calls for the increasing of charter schools. Helen, as a parent, and you have children in public school and charter as well, what's the downside of this part of this proposal?
Well, I think what we're looking at is sustainable systems of education that benefit everyone. I mean, the charter system, the rise of the charter system hasn't only impacted public schools, it's deeply impacted parochial schools. The school district issued a statement or a report recently that showed 30% of the students may have come out of the parochial system, certainly didn't come out of the private, of the district. So we want to have a conversation about what's sustainable in this time. Have we taken a really good look at the charter school system, how it's functioned? Are we doing appropriate oversight? And are we looking at the number of students served? Last week, a report came out that if you took out charters that directly served immigrant populations, less than 1% of the district's 13,000 ELL immigrant student population is in charters. That's a very significant number if you consider that almost 10% of the district is ELL, and if we're moving to a system where 40% are now going to be in charters which don't serve that population, we have a lot of equity concerns.
And to you, Jerry Jordan, in terms of increasing the number of charter schools in Philadelphia, what's your response to that?
Well, I think that when the pushes to increase the number of charter schools, not only in Philadelphia but anywhere else, we need to look at the evidence about charter school performance. And when we look at the research, what we see is that the overwhelming majority of them are not doing as well as the neighborhood public schools.
What about the ones that are successful? I'm thinking of KIPP and Mastery, for instance, and they have some charters in Philadelphia. Is there a model there that you think could be used to improve education?
I don't know that I would say necessarily evidence that could be used to improve education. We know what works in improving education, and those are the things that we have been fighting for to make sure that the public schools in Philadelphia have, as opposed to cutting out those things that students need.
And I do want to pick up on that, but let me go to you, Daniel Denver, because this report identifies something like 45,000 students in unsafe or low-performing schools. I guess the question is, I mean, everyone wants all children in Philadelphia to do well in school, mm-hmm. For themselves,
certainly.
For the city, for the, frankly, you know, probably for the country and maybe even the world. But what can be done for those 45,000 students?
Well, I think the problem with this whole kind of corporate-inspired school reform movement that's been dominating the debate about education. This year is the 10th anniversary of No Child Left Behind, which really unleashed a lot of this emphasis on high-stakes testing and charters as a solution to public education's problem. One of the most disturbing things about it is that it's changed the discussion away from the central issues. What are the great predictors of student achievement? Poverty. we have failed to deal with family poverty and childhood poverty in this country. In fact, it's gotten worse since the onset of the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. And then number two, funding equity. No high-performing country. You look at really successful countries that do a great job educating, you know, the vast majority of their children, like Finland, and do they have a centrally funded system where every school district gets the funding they need. In Philadelphia, we're funding students at $13,000 per pupil per year, while in a wealthy suburb like Lower Merion, they're getting about $26,000 per pupil per year. So changing the debate from that has been a major political victory for opponents of public education, but a real tragedy for public education.
Well, let me turn to you, Helen Gim. In Pennsylvania, as in other states, it's property taxes largely paying for public education. Having just interviewed Governor Corbett and looking at the legislature in Harrisburg, there doesn't seem to be a lot of appetite to either give back money that was taken out of the public school system or to look at this issue of inequity.
The issue I think that we're looking at is that this is not a Philadelphia issue, and that's something that this legislature is realizing. I actually believe that they understand very clearly the level of distress that school districts are going through. So the Pennsylvania School Board Association recently released a report yesterday that showed of the schools that they surveyed, almost half said that they would be experiencing fiscal distress within 3 years. These are high-performing districts, well-performing districts. These are not, you know, struggling systems, and that about half a dozen actually said that they were already bankrupt and or teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, much like Philadelphia and Chester. Mm-hmm. So we're really seeing a system in which things have gotten to the point. There's a difference between trying to find ways that are reasonable and sustainable, and we've gone too far to the other end, which is to completely underfund, defund public education, disinvest to the point where you starve school districts into dysfunction and then throw them to the private sector and say, you know, good luck.
One of the other criticisms, Jerry Jordan, is this plan to create these achievement networks to essentially decentralize the system in Philadelphia. What's your response to that?
I think that it's wrong to do that. To bring in outside individuals to be responsible for the operation of our neighborhood schools is not the right approach. This is really outsourcing or privatizing the school district and its functions. Helen just talked about concerns about equity, and each network in the city could very well not provide the same opportunities for children in other networks within the city.
But are you saying the centralization of the system is an effective model, that it's working?
It can work. It can work if indeed schools are given what it is that they need in order to function. It is amazing to me that for a number of years, millions of citizens attended the Philadelphia Public Schools. I am one of those. And it functioned. It worked for all of us. And it can work. But as Helen pointed out, you cannot underfund schools and then decide that as a result of that, let's now allow schools and principals to have more autonomy, but without the tools that they need in order to function properly, without giving the children the educational opportunities that they deserve. What these networks will or will not provide is not clear. However, there is a question, as I said, about the lack of equity that may very well exist from one section of the city to another.
Jane and Denver, let me get you to respond to that. And I'm only quoting from the district saying, first of all, this would be a pilot program to see how it would work. And it could be run by nonprofits or even people that had formerly worked for the School District of Philadelphia. Your response?
Well, if you reduce central office staff to 200 people, a skeleton crew, and break up the district into these achievement networks, I don't see how that's a pilot project. That is the dismantling of Philadelphia public schools as we know them. And the SRC and Knudsen are really fond of putting out these corporate speak buzzwords like accountability. But we have a record of what charters and their charter management organizations would certainly be taking a role in running some of these achievement networks, it seems. We have a record of what sort of accountability exists for charters. We have 19, I believe, Philadelphia area charters that have been under federal investigation in the last few years. That's an enormous number. We have the most, when you're turning hundreds of million dollars of taxpayer dollars a year over to private and politically connected companies in a place like Philadelphia, I mean, this should come as no surprise. And there's almost no oversight from the district and really no oversight from the state. So,
and Helen, just a quick response. I know you have something to say, and we have about 30 seconds before our break about these autonomous districts or these networks.
And again, we want to have a conversation about autonomy. We want to have a conversation about decentralization, but this isn't the conversation to have. We ran EMOs. They were in achievement networks. The University of Pennsylvania ran an EMO in West Philadelphia that was largely considered, you know, not a productive experiment. And, you know, and they're obviously someone that the school district is looking to do this again. So what lessons have we learned? And what are we really trying to achieve?
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation, talking with three critics of a proposal unveiled a few weeks ago from the School District of Philadelphia that would, as the district said, deal with some of the financial issues and look at this problem of low student achievement and unsafe schools. We had three supporters of the program on a couple of weeks ago. Now we have three critics, Jerry Jordan, Helen Gim, and Daniel Denver. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Greensgrow Farm supports WHYY. The Greensgrow Camden Mobile Markets are open Thursdays and Fridays in 8 Camden neighborhood locations. Full details at greensgrow.org/Camden.
WHYY is proudly supported by the new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro. This new hospital is now open. It was designed with all single-patient rooms and innovations that may help improve healing and lower infections. Features include a rapid response emergency room and physicians from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia to care for children. The new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro, redefining care. Now open. More at princetonhcs.org.
Bring your appetite, food fanatics, as WHYY celebrates some of the region's greatest culinary minds with Best of the Chefs, a two-hour tasting featuring an array of area restaurants, breweries, and businesses. They'll serve up their tastiest treats, and your votes decide who is crowned Best of the Chefs in several mouth-watering categories. Also, a raffle, beer garden, and live music, Thursday, June 21st. Tickets at whyy.org/member experience.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, introducing the new 2013 Lincoln MKS with organically tanned leather from Scotland, Prussian burl wood, French seams, and curve control. Lincoln, now it gets interesting.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, talking about a School District of Philadelphia proposal unveiled last month that requires more money from the city, calls for school closures, cuts in wages and benefits, more charter schools, a new curriculum, and the creation of clusters. We spoke with two members of the SRC, the School Reform Commission, and the acting superintendent just a few weeks ago, and today we're hearing from three critics. We separated these shows because this is complicated stuff, and we wanted to break it down into pieces that we can talk about. Our guests are Daniel Denver, a reporter at the Philadelphia City Paper, Helen Gim, founder of Parents United for Public Education, and Jerry Jordan, president of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. And if you have a student in school here in Philadelphia, no matter where that you send them, what do you think that can be done to improve education for all students in this city? Do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Helen, let me go back to you, and I hear your criticism of charters, and I think the research shows that they're a mixed bag, to say the least. But I also was looking at some PSA scores from 29 neighborhood high schools. This is actually from Tom Farrick, who wrote in Metropolis, looking at some of these public schools in Philadelphia, looking at 11th grade results in math and reading. 63% of the students below basic in math, 52% in reading. So clearly there are problems in the public schools. There are some good public schools, but many students in this city are floundering in public schools that are not performing. What can be done?
I mean, one of the things that we've tried to do is stabilize the district. I mean, one of the problems, I think, when we're dealing with a struggling school district, and absolutely nobody around the table is saying we should leave things the way they are. It's unacceptable, especially as a parent. But what we know is that we get people coming in and saying, I can't take it anymore. We need dramatic reform. And usually what dramatic reform gets us is a whole lot of drama. And the biggest challenge I feel after having been in the school district for as many years as I've had is that the only thing we can count on in Philadelphia is constant turnover, change. Charles Payne wrote a great book, So Much Reform, So Little Change. And that phrase really applies to Philadelphia. We're going through sweeping changes. Have we stabilized? What do we know is working? How are we analyzing systems? And how are we creating new systems so that they're sustainable with one another? And how are we not just switching randomly and sweeping from pendulum swing to pendulum swing, from one extreme to another, without really thinking about what's working? The other thing that I want to say is that any plan that doesn't fundamentally focus in on the child and the classroom and the interaction between the teacher, the child, and the school is really a plan that's fussing around the edges of education reform. It's a lot of attention is paid to management and structure, and to me, it's not dealing with the most important parts, the substance and the content of education that lasts over time.
And you're talking about the relationship in the classroom. And the materials, the curriculum, the challenges, the expectations.
Correct. The substantive parts of education is really not around the management area. It is really based on how are we creating structures and systems of support around that classroom and ensuring accountability there, too.
Well, go ahead, Jerry Jordan. You represent the teachers in this school district. What can be done?
I think that it's important for us to look at what works and what has worked around the country and other school districts and to replicate what works as opposed to experimenting on children. We know that research shows us that a child by the age of three who lives in a family that is poor, they hear 30 million less words than a child who comes from a more affluent background. And by the time that those children are in kindergarten, the poor children, they are more likely to score in the bottom quartile on assessments of math, reading, and general knowledge. And what is even more disturbing is that we know that those children, by the time that they are in fourth grade, are going to be 3 years behind children from a more affluent background. So since we know that, we need to make sure that we are providing early childhood programs for all of our children to make sure that we're able to work with them in their early years. We need to make sure that we do what's important relative to having highly trained, effective teachers in every classroom. We've got a group of talented educators in the system, but when you don't give them the tools that they need, if we don't have the resources to intervene when a child needs support, help in becoming a successful reader, we pay the price. And the data that you just gave us lets me know that we're right when we're fighting and saying that the district has an obligation to make sure that we provide all children in Philadelphia the educational opportunities to learn.
And I want to pick up on that. But let me go to you, Daniel Denver, because you and others have talked about the privatization of the Philadelphia school system. When you say that, tell us what you mean by that.
Well, I think it's important to understand what I tried to lay out in my article is that this proposal is not taking place in a vacuum. This is not bad old Philadelphia messing up and begging Harrisburg for a state bailout. The state has been in control of Philadelphia public schools since 2001. It still is today. And we should be holding the state responsible. And now to the question of privatization,
right.
History is also really key here because the central component of the state takeover in 2001 was turning over a number of district schools and initially the entire district to for-profit educational management organizations
like Edison,
Schools.
Right.
They failed. Everyone admits that they failed. They are now gone. And yet, here we are again, back at square one, saying maybe, even though this is just a few years after unregulated private interests tanked our whole economy, we somehow have this resilient, not we, but some people have this resilient faith that the private sector can fix all of our problems.
Well, let me just, for clarification, but do you think of then charter schools as the privatization of the school system?
Yes,
Even though it's public money?
It's public money, but it's privately managed. And you look, for example, you look at the 19, the sky-high salaries being paid to the people running a lot of these charters. You look to Chester, where an incredibly powerful Republican power player is, I think, taking 41% of all of the taxpayer dollars that are going to the Chester Community Charter, which now educates more than half of K-8 students in that district. This is a company not only run by this man who is incredibly close to Tom Corbett, but also, as I discovered in reporting this story, by someone who had long-standing business ties to an alleged mob associate who is in prison for serious financial crimes. The distinction between an EMO and a charter, I think, is more of a tactical political distinction on the part of the corporate school reform movement.
And I hear what you're
profit
saying.
Profit can be made either way.
I can hear what you're saying, but I think it should also be said that there are public schools that are also, maybe in different kinds of ways, are failing students, are not living up to their responsibility.
Absolutely, no doubt. I'm in no way defending the public education status quo. I think the problem here is that the very same people and the very same political forces who have spent decades underfunding and dismantling school districts in poor cities like Philadelphia are now the very same people purporting to offer a solution, which is privatization.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, only because I want to make sure our listeners know who my guests are and what we're talking about. That's Daniel Denver, a reporter at the Philadelphia City Paper. Also with us is Helen Gim, founder of Parents United for Public Education. And our third guest is Jerry Jordan, president of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. We are talking about a proposal to, in many ways, reorder the school district here in the city of Philadelphia. We heard from some of the author and some supporters of that proposal a couple weeks ago. Our three guests are critics, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And I should say to our listeners, this is a proposal. There is much that we don't know in terms of specifics, for instance, specific schools that might be closed. But generally speaking, we're curious about what you think should be done to improve education here in Philadelphia. And you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Helen, I know you want to say something. Go ahead.
You know, the other thing to think about in terms of Philadelphia, we want really a local process that responds to local needs. And the plan that we got was paid for by $1.4 million by the Boston Consulting Group, which has made a practice of going around the country selling similar plans for distressed school districts. The Public School Notebook reported last night that there's another $1.2 million that's coming through the district to extend BCG's contract and continue on. And I also think that that's a little bit troubling. I mean, we need a public process, but if we're having private money funded, it raises a lot of questions. Much of the private money is coming from wonderful philanthropists, but who have a very vested interest in charter schools and charter expansion. And so I think it raises some troubling questions about if private money does fund a public process, is that maximizing the public dialogue on it?
Jerry Jordan had talked about early childhood education. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. I think that is so important to make sure that children have a strong start when it comes to their education. And I'll go back to you, Helen Gim, and I'm sure people from the SRC, the school district, maybe even Governor Corbett would agree with that. But how, under the reality of how we fund education in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia, how do you find more money in order to bring about the improvements that all three of you were talking about? Where is the money?
Well, I think we have to...
Well, that's Jerry Jordan, but go ahead.
We have to ask ourselves, how did we get to where we are now? As Dan pointed out, the state took over the school district of Philadelphia in 2001. The state took over Chester Upland in 1994 and had control of Chester Upland up until probably 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. In both instances, budgets were allowed to get out of whack. The question is, how did the state allow a $629 million deficit to occur?
And this was in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia last year.
Right.
Yeah, we love to talk about how horrible Arlene Ackerman is, but the state was Arlene Ackerman's boss that whole time.
And
go ahead,
you know,
Helen.
We have a huge state budget, and we're spending money in it. And the question is, what are the priorities? When Governor Corbett passed his budget last year that took $1 billion out of public education, he made a statement that said, this is a budget that separates the must-haves from the nice-to-haves. And clearly, this administration is the first in 20 years, Republican or Democrat, to completely disinvest in public education. That was a conscious choice. It wasn't a, oh my gosh, we're going broke, we have no idea what to do. This was a conscious decision on the state's part. Similarly, the School District of Philadelphia and expanding charters, recognizing that charters have traditionally fallen under the deficit column. The school district saves $33 million by closing 40 charter schools. It expands to, it could be as much as 30,000 students. We're talking about $270 million a year. Asking serious questions mm-hmm. about what are the balances and the choices that we're making, because we still have $3 billion in this system and we need to use that money better.
And speaking of nice-to-haves versus must-haves, I mean, the governor, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but is spending hundreds of millions of dollars still on constructing a new prison in the state, which is an issue that I know he's tried to get away from because he did cancel construction of one prison, but there's still a new prison going up, and that's not where hundreds of millions of dollars need to go in the state.
But it sounds like the three of you were saying that looking over the last decade, that the plan, the underlying plan has been to dismantle the public school system and to privatize it. And if we're focusing on Philadelphia, that's been the plan of the state. Would you agree with that, Helen?
Yes, but I think it's been sloppily done, for example. So I would say that, there's sort of architectural moments. I think 2001 was one of them. I actually think that this plan right now is one of these architectural moments where there's a conscious decision to move into it. But the intervening years have been just really sloppy, you know, failures to be accountable, failures to make sure that systems, if they're going to go this way, are functional and sustainable. And that's where, you know, the real disgrace is that it's been a sloppy mess for 10 years.
Let me get to Joe from Fairmount to join our conversation. And Joe, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome.
I must say that grudgingly I am for the reform project that the Philadelphia School District wants to implement. And I say this only because the charter schools are really the only schools that understand and recognize the concept of parent accountability. You know, the problem with being a former urban school teacher, the problem is that many of the schools and administrators as well don't recognize that, you know, if you can't make parents accountable for their kids' behavior, a school falls apart. And what the charter schools offer is the ability for the parents and the administrators to get together and say, well, look, these kids can learn, these kids cannot. And if these kids cannot have the social skills to come to our school, well, then we can say that they cannot come here.
Well, you know, Joe, let me take...
Public education could change.
But a public school can't just kick out a kid because they don't think they're going to perform in the classroom. It doesn't really work that way. Let me give Jerry Jordan a chance to respond. I appreciate the call, Joe. Go ahead, Jerry.
Certainly, Joe knows from having been a public school teacher, which he just said, that we have to accept all children, and we should accept all children. And it is our job to work with all. We cannot discriminate, should not discriminate, and we need to work with the parents in order to deal with any kind of behavioral adjustment problem that needs to occur. Does it happen in every school, in every community, with all parents? No, it doesn't. But we still have to do the best that we can in order to make sure that we teach the children how to behave properly. And that has been the case. Depending upon where kids attend and the various communities for as long as I can remember, but that we are able in every school to teach children.
Go ahead, Helen.
You know, I think that there's a misnomer out there that somehow charters equal some kind of vision of education, and clearly that is not the case. There are 82 different charter schools in the city of Philadelphia. They are each run by separate management boards. They each have their own separate missions. They each have a form of delivery of education that may be vastly different from any other. So for someone to make broad generalizations about charters, I think has been one of the biggest problems around this dialogue. Similarly, to paint all public schools as being low performing, 2/3 of our school district, which is not enough, actually performs better and does a great service to the children of this city. And that, you know, what Joe was saying about having parents involved, you will see active parents. And that's part of our goal, is to talk about the active folks who are rallying around public education in schools.
Dan, we have about 45 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with Jerry that a school that can kick a student out because they're not making the grade is not a public school by my understanding. The proponents of this plan, you know, have on your show accused critics of being ideologues, which I think is a strange and misleading accusation in two ways. First, because yes, there are unabashedly principles at stake. Public education, equitable and good public education open to everyone, is a principle I think that all three of us are willing to stand behind. And two, they are the people who are offering a plan that does not have evidence to back it up, whereas there is evidence that their privatization model has fared poorly in the past.
Well, we will pick up on that after this very short break with Daniel Denver, Helen Gim, and Jerry Jordan, and take some more calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Inquirer proudly supports WHYY. The Inquirer recently won the 2012 Pulitzer Prize for Public Service Journalism for its Assault on Learning multimedia investigative series. News and more. The Inquirer. Your life. Your stories.
Support for WHYY comes from Nemours, a national pediatric healthcare system. Through prevention, intervention, education, and research, Nemours has made a promise to help kids reach their full potential. This promise is lived out daily at Nemours Alfred I. DuPont Hospital for Children in Wilmington, Delaware, offering advanced inpatient and outpatient care in more than 30 specialties. The same specialty care is also available in communities throughout the region at the Nemours Children's Clinic. More information at Nemours.org.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Forget other statistics. A hot economist says workers should look at the geography of jobs. Even if you don't write software, head to a place where they do. Also, rap superstar Kanye West is a pop culture lightning rod, but is he also an American Mozart? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Wildwoods present a celebration of Heroes Festival May 25th through the 27th, paying tribute to America's military, veterans, and first responders. Information at wildwoodsnj.com/heroes. The Wildwoods support WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe. We are talking about several things, including how to improve education here in the city of Philadelphia. Also getting response to a school district of Philadelphia reorganization plan that would dramatically transform public education in the city. Our guests are Daniel Denver. He's a staff writer for the Philadelphia City Paper, a contributing writer at Salon. And I should add that his most recent City Paper cover story asked this question: who's killing Philly public schools? Also with us, Helen Gim. She blogs for the Public School Notebook. She also leads Asian Americans United and founded Parents United for Public Education. And rounding things out, Jerry Jordan is also with us, president of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jerry, let me go back to you when you talked about the importance of early childhood education. I don't think you'd get an argument from anybody there. Also talking, Helen talked about the importance of that teacher-student relationship. And obviously you need teachers that have a good curriculum and they have materials. Should there also be some kind of rigorous testing of teachers to make sure that they're in the right classroom, teaching the right class, and that they have the skills to be able to educate students in Philadelphia?
Absolutely. There is a need to make sure that we have highly qualified, experienced teachers in every classroom, teachers who are certified in the subjects that they teach and that they know how to teach it. You mentioned curriculum. Curriculum has been given to teachers to teach, as opposed to teachers having the creativity to teach a certain way. Too often our teachers have been scripted, and they have scripted lessons that they must follow in order to teach, and it really takes the fun and the joy out of teaching. And unfortunately, the district has been punitive when they have found that teachers were not on the right line on the right day at the right time. And that is something that the district has said that they're going to change next year, because that's part of moving toward school autonomy and
these
allowing
networks.
No, not necessarily the networks, just allowing the principals to decide what curriculum they're going to use and what materials.
Do you like that idea? I mean, do you think that's a good idea?
Well, it's something that we have said for a number of years, that the scripted programs don't work, and a teacher who has the freedom to teach on any given day, something happens, and to be able to talk to children about it and to create a lesson and to go home and to really prepare material for your class the next day to follow up is so valuable. Children remember it. They learn the material. And every child deserves to be taught the curriculum for the grade and the subject that they're in that given year. But make sure that teachers know what they should be teaching the kids, but let them figure out how to do it. Allow them to be creative and make school fun for kids.
Helen, what do you want? I mean, the district unveiled this proposal. What do you want next? You've talked about the importance of having a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I think we need a public process, and we don't need a public process just to add noise and delay things. It's actually because I think the public brings in, particularly parents, they bring in a different focus. They bring in specific stories. They bring in areas where these things don't go well and go off the rails, and we're really not getting that. We need to take a look at a proposed 11% cut in instructional spending that's been proposed for FY 2013 that's evident in the budget right now that we're taking a look at. You know, we need a good conversation about school closings. I mean, we need to understand the criteria by which schools are being closed. We had 9 schools targeted this year. 2 of them were mistakes. So if we're going to 40 in 1 year, we need a real good understanding of what schools are being targeted and what options are being given to parents and families. So the conversation is not about delay. It's not about noise. It's not about whining or complaining. It's really about finding solutions and getting people engaged in local needs and a local response.
Anything you want to add to that, Daniel? Then we'll get back to our callers.
I wanted to just pick up on what Jerry was saying about curriculum and the other important component of this corporate-inspired reform, education reform process that we've been under for 10 years is the obsession with standardized tests. And what we've seen in Philadelphia is the narrow, and districts nationwide, is the narrowing of curriculum, turning classes into test prep boot camp, less PE, less recess, less time for arts, less library, less literature, less American history. And not only is that robbing these students of real education by having their teachers teach to the test, it's now clear that some teachers, under incredible pressure, are also cheating to the test. Public School Notebook and the Enquirer have done great investigations and found that, like Atlanta and like a growing number of districts nationwide, there's a lot of cheating going on. This is not a real curriculum.
Just a couple of things here, but the dropout rate, I mean, some students do finish high school, get a GED, and go on to get more education after that. But the dropout rate is something like 60% in Philadelphia. Many of these students who graduate don't have the kind of skills that they can do college work. I mean, you know, and I'm looking, I guess, back at you, Daniel, which is how do we address that to make sure that all students are getting a quality education?
Yeah, well, I think that they're... We need that funding going into the classroom, and we need funding of wraparound services. Their students in Philadelphia come to school with needs that students in Lower Marion are not coming to school with.
Where do you get the money, though? Where does that money come from?
We need to fight for the money, and I don't think that Corbett is going to give it up necessarily right away, but... What we're not seeing any leadership from City Hall. We're not seeing any leadership from Nair Nutter. We're not really seeing any leadership from City Council either. And to not even fight the status quo really legitimizes it and normalizes it. We have to, one, at least fight. Two, at least do no harm with the plan of how we deal with this fiscal crisis, because it's a real fiscal crisis.
Yes.
And three, have a real, as Helen has been saying, a community-led process of how we're going to deal with that process,
very,
that crisis.
Really quickly, yeah. You know, when we talk about dropouts, it's not like they just drop out. You know, you look at the loss this year of what we've had. We've lost 323 special ed teachers. We lost 50 art teachers this year, 22 biology teachers, 47 nurses. We're down to a nursing deployment system that only protects the medically fragile. That is an absolutely unsustainable, it's a disgrace to the system. So then, you know, last year, right at this time, the mayor unveiled an agreement, accountability agreement with the School District of Philadelphia that took a look at things like contracting, over $100 million in private discretionary contracting, including no-bid contracts in professional services. Have we even had that conversation? That's not evident at all. So when we talk about choices, we want to really show evidence that they've been looking at all of them.
I know all three of you have more to say, but let me get some more callers in. We have, looks like Dave from Ardmore joining us on Radio Times. Dave, go ahead. You're on the air.
I do not support this plan for changing the school district. I'm an educational researcher, and I look at schools on a regular basis to determine particularly if charter schools are working, and they are not. There's a misnomer we're using is the term achievement gap. We don't have an achievement gap. We are making gains in public schools in urban areas all across the United States. We have opportunity gaps. In my district, the per pupil expenditure is $24,000. 5 miles away in Philadelphia is $12,000. That pays for a lot of teachers at $24,000. It doesn't at $12,000. Those are opportunity gaps. Those are the terms we need to start using, not achievement gap.
Dave, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Jerry, you want to add to that? Anything you'd like to add to that?
I wanted to also point out that the dropout rate, not that it is much better, but it's 38%. There's a 62% graduation rate right now. However, one thing that is missing and has been missing in too many of our schools is that there is a lack of career and technology classes for children to be able to learn skills that will allow them to become employable. And we need to put those career and technical classes back in schools, because when children are able to find that what they're learning is going to allow them to become employed when they leave high school, they come, they stay. We have a really successful automotive academy at West Philadelphia. The youngsters have won national awards for the work that they do. I talk to the teachers, and the teachers tell me they have to put the children out at 6 o'clock in the evening.
To keep them out of the
evening.
School.
That's right, because they love working on that project.
Well, this plan does call for a curriculum that hopes or proposes to get students through school into college and into some of these vocational opportunities that you've been talking about as well.
But does it talk about actually funding them?
Okay, fair enough. Let me get Kathleen from Germantown to join us. Kathleen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for having my
sure.
call on. I know all three of your guests agree that the Philadelphia school system is vastly underfunded. And my question is for Daniel. You wrote about in your article the court challenge that went to the state Supreme Court and did not succeed, about the state constitution's requirement that the General Assembly provide for the maintenance and support of a thorough and efficient system of public education to serve the needs of the Commonwealth. And then later on, that was taken up as a federal lawsuit by Superintendent David Hornbeck, and then John Street just dropped that tactic. And my question is whether anyone else is picking that tactic back up. What is happening to try to get a more equitable funding scheme for our schools?
Kathleen, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a very good question. It was about a decade ago that we saw the last real city-led fight for adequate funding under Superintendent Hornbeck. But today, it's really the Chester Upland district, which is even farther down this into the pits of this privatization laboratory experiment than we are in Philadelphia. They have suits in both federal and state court challenging that funding violates the state constitution. So if Chester Upland succeeds, then that could be set a major precedent for Philly.
Kathleen, thanks for the call. Let's go to South Philadelphia. We have Mike waiting to join our conversation. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Amanda. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm very much for this plan, and two quick points.
Sure.
One is, it seems to me that we're sort of obfuscating what really the issue is. You know, long before there were standardized testing, or long before there were budget cuts, or long before there were charter schools, the School District of Philadelphia was turning out mediocrity at best for many, many thousands of students. And by contrast, you now have a group of schools, many of which are charter, some of which are traditional district schools, that are turning out great results. And you know, what I see at the heart of this plan is an opportunity to give parents more options to put their kids in those schools. I'm a parent of two kids who are soon going to be of school age, and it just is, it seems the height of arrogance to me to tell parents, no, you can't go to this school. There are thousands of parents on waiting lists right now, but leave it to us. We're going to try and fix a system that, in fact, has never worked.
Well, Mike, I appreciate the call, and let me toss that to Helen Gimm, also has students, or I should say children, in the district.
Yeah, the, when it comes to individual parents, the crisis around where to send your child is the most, the most important thing you can ask yourself. And it's one that we've definitely talked through a lot of situations with. The question becomes moving away from the individual and taking a look at different systems. You know, what has actually worked? Say if you were to take a school district like New Orleans, where 70% of the students go into charter, multiple different charters, every single one of them has a different application system, every single one of them has a different admittance process. There are different times of entry. And then you ask yourself, is it that you want a do-it-yourself system of education, which relies not really on choice, but sort of information, access to information, understanding processes, and action, and just say, you know, good luck with that. I think we have an existing system of choice. We have a huge 25% of our students are in the charter school system, and we should take a look at how that's working and sustain. You know, I don't think anyone here is saying undo the charter school system. No one's saying that. But what we want to talk about is, as we move forward, what are we trying to do? And for the parents who are in failing schools, no one wants to keep them there. They have the right to move out. But there are also parents like at Creighton Elementary that are struggling to turn around their schools and have the right to do so and try to figure out sustainable ways that last.
Mike, thanks for calling into Radio Times. I'm looking at the clock here. There was a recent article, I'll toss this to you, Daniel Denver, looking at Kipp School here in Philadelphia and their association now with the University of Pennsylvania. Do you see that as a positive model?
I am not deeply familiar beyond the Inquirer story with the new Kipp program, but what I do know about is there are certainly some good charter schools, but the data is clear overall that they are not a good replacement for traditional public schools. And even at some of these good charters, quote unquote, some are good and some are quote unquote good. And I do not have the research has not been done to distinguish exactly which are which. But I spoke to a Mastery teacher, which is well regarded in some circles, who says there's no way he can build a career there because he has worked to the bone. His school day is longer, his pay is less, he doesn't have union protection.
Well, speaking of union, and let me put this to you, Jerry Jordan, we have about a minute before we have to say goodbye, but members of the union that represents bus drivers, cleaners, building engineers, and other blue-collar workers got layoff notices, and there's a protest rally in about an hour.
Yes, there is, and I will be there to support them. They're not members of the Federation of Teachers, but they are members of the union of the AFL-CIO. And they are protesting because the district has begun to outsource their positions. And so they receive layoff notices letting them know that their jobs will be eliminated and they will literally outsource the positions. It's wrong. These are the parents of our children in our public schools who have jobs with benefits that they want to absolutely just eliminate. I would like to go back and
actually,
just add something about...
very quickly. They're playing my song.
Okay.
You know what?
Thank you.
Hold on to that thought. I'm sure we will revisit education. We do this a lot on Radio Times. My thanks to all three
thanks
of you
for
joining
us
today on Radio Times. Jerry Jordan, president of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. Helen Gim, founder of Parents United for Public Education. Daniel Denver, staff writer for the Philadelphia City Paper. And a couple weeks ago, we had supporters of this proposal as guests on Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoe, and thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Time. Stay with us. We'll be right back.